Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
Some people just describe themselves as in they describe themselves in a way which doesn't actually look like the achievements they've had. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. He was great, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, vibrancy, enthusiasm, honesty. And I love the fact, well, I'm not very good at that.
Yes.
I'm not very good at that.
I think the thing that came through so strongly for me is that he is somebody who's very aware of his environment. And when he's in an environment that works for him, he thrives.
Yeah.
And when he's in an environment that doesn't suit him, it's a problem. And he has worked out over time the sort of places that work well for him, which probably doesn't come as a surprise that he then ended creating his own squat dental practice, because that was an environment he could control and thrive.
Yeah.
But a really interesting guy.
I thought it was a real interesting chat with him.
Not conventional by a typical dentist measurement, but someone who's had a lot of success, has contributed a lot to the profession, and a really good heart. You know, the thing he did for Wells on Wheels, which people will hear about, was remarkable.
And a thoroughly nice guy.
Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
No, it's brilliant. Really good.
Yeah, it was really good. Really, really good episode. So I think we're in for a good time today.
I think it's going to be a cracker.
I think it's going to be an absolute corker. So today...
No pressure, Amit.
No, we have Amit Patel joining us. And Amit graduated from the University of Liverpool back in 1997. He's a membership of the Faculty of Dental Surgeons at the Royal College of Surgeons in Edinburgh in 2000. 4-year training program in periodontics and implantology at Guy's. No, he's making you sound really good. We've got to build you up. Principal at the Birmingham Dental Specialist and President of the Association of Dental Implantology. Hello, Amit. How are you? You well?
Who are you? Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me to do the podcast. I'm really looking forward to it.
We are as well, yes. And for people who are watching this on YouTube, you may not recognise Amit because his hair is not as long as it used to be, but we're going to come to that later.
We're with it, sir.
All will be explained. All will be
no
explained.
No extensions visible.
No problem.
So before we get...
No, going back to your podcast, I've obviously listened to some of it, and it's been, you know, it's quite good watching the two of you banter. I watched, and actually I listened to Joe Lovett's one. That was very good.
He's a good guy, Joe.
Yeah, he's a smart cookie, really, isn't he? Yeah.
He is.
We've been very fortunate. People have been really generous with their time.
Yeah, hugely.
And what's quite nice is, whilst it's the business of dentistry, it's great having dentists on, but it's also great having the wider profession on as well, because talking to lots of dentists, it's quite insightful.
Monotonous,
where
is that word?
No, but very often it's dentists themselves that say we are only part of dentistry.
There's and we don't talk about dentistry, do we?
Not clinical. That's not our bag. It's not our world at all. It's more important to talk about kind of people and the things that they've done.
Interesting people. That's what's more interesting.
But before we get to you and your dental career, what do we need to know about your early years? Talk us through your childhood to give us some insights to the man you've become today.
Am I the man that I've become today? God, that's a good one, isn't it?
It's a deep start, isn't it?
It is a deep start. Yeah, it's interesting because I'm 51 this year, and we had our school reunion two Saturdays ago. Because I'm from Northwest London, a place called Edgware,
down the road.
Somehow we managed to get 60 of us to turn up in a place called Mill Hill near Edgware and a pub. And it was so good, you know, to see all the people that had, you know, most of us left at 16, right? Only a few went on to do the A-level. And to see all the girls and the boys that we hadn't seen in years, it was great. And it was like, you know, you hadn't left off, you know? And it was, what was lovely was there was no competition about, oh, you know, what have you done and this, that, and the other. We never spoke about what we've done. It was as if we, you know, left in 1989, and carried on talking about what school was like.
Wow.
Hilarious, you know. So so we can do that again next year, hopefully. And we had people come from New York and Japan and stuff like that. When I was living in Edgware, it was good, you know, because I had a whole mix of friends. I lived in a very Jewish area, so I had you know, a mix of Jewish friends and then friends from other religions and stuff like that. And we had, you know, it was really, really multicultural. It was really good.
I was going to say, I sense you really enjoyed your school years, because back to a reunion and literally pick up where you left off, and that not just be you, but obviously everybody else buying into that, it sounds like a happy place.
You're right. Everybody, wow,
that's cool.
It was just the coolest thing. And
and the fact that no one was posturing.
The WhatsApp group, and we're all talking about this. And the worst thing is, you know, we're talking about some of the teachers and what they've been up to lately and some of the inappropriate stuff they were getting up to at school. And it's like, oh God, there's no way get up with that. Get up, you know.
I say it's a different world, though, isn't it?
It was a massively different world. I mean, you know, I went to a normal state school, and you know, it was entertaining, and the stuff that, you know, it was good fun. Yeah. So yeah, that was me as a kid, and you know, you get always asked this question of, you know, who influenced you in your childhood? Nothing did. You know, I just went out and played, right? And
did you do any sport, Amit?
No.
No sport at all.
I was shit at sports. So, you give me a football, I don't know what to do with it. But yeah, so I'd be waiting there to be picked to play football. Even
I hate it. No.
And I was always the last person, which is fine, right? It's not an issue. And even now, people ring me up, can you make up the team? I'm like, I am shit at the game. And then I will stand there. And I'm still the last one to get picked. So my girlfriend is very good at football, right? She used to play for Macclesfield when she was younger and stuff. And she's the athlete, you know, 100 meter sprint, all that sort of stuff. And so we play five-a-side football, and she's like the captain of one side, and there's a bloke on the other one, the captain. And I'm still the last one. And she says, I have to pick you. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah,
you're that kid that always gets picked last.
I'm just really impressed at 51 you're still playing five-a-side football.
I'm really bad. They don't pass the ball. That's it. It's just, you know.
Oh really?
And if someone gives a rough tackle, I'll be like, I'll take them on. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, oh, it's only. But I didn't play any sports. And, you know, obviously me being Indian, you know, I thought, oh, let's play cricket, because my dad watched it a lot and all this sort of rubbish. And so I, you know, I tried to play. I was shit at that too.
There's a theme with sports here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was really funny because going back to the reunion, because in our yearbook, I managed to catch a ball, right, and caught someone out. And it was like put in the school book, like, Amit managed to catch.
Oh right, that was impressive.
Yeah, that made the yearbook. Yeah, Amit caught a ball.
So sad. Yeah. And it was really funny because actually, I know I'm going off on one, but there's one girl, a friend of mine, name was Estelle, and she was like, "I've still got your cricket jumper that you gave me." I'm like, "Did I really? I can't remember." It's like, "Oh yeah, I do remember giving it to you, because I never was going to go back to the spot." I'm like, "Take my jumper. I ain't wearing that piece of stupid woolly."
She's still got your cricket jumper now.
Yeah. I know, but there's nothing there. But she says it's yeah. I didn't listen to what you were doing.
Flip 34 yeah. years ago.
I know. Has it not rotted?
I'm surprised it hasn't like rotted.
Yes, what I was thinking. Yeah. So yeah, school was good, and I had a good time. You know, it was, you know, and I think all of us, when you think about it, you had no worries, didn't you? And you could just
It was a simpler time and a simpler life.
So no what social was the, media, no none of that nonsense.
So what was the trigger for you to then
go out? Sorry, you could go out and no one worried that you were killed or whatever, because that's not.
And you just rock up home when you got home for dinner. Yeah. That was it. Mm. There were no mobile phones to send a WhatsApp or a text message. Just out about living your life.
Oh, no one took a picture of you and then post it.
So what was the trigger from school to end up going to dental school? Was that your choice? Was it your first choice? Was it
your mum and dad?
Your mum and dad?
yeah, mum and dad's choice. Yeah, that's what it really is, isn't it? No, so I am not an academic person. I'm not very bright. You know, I was never in the top sets. Always an average sort of thing. And I would have left school at 16. So my really good friends went on to were going to go into the A-level. So I said, all right, I'll do this. So my GCSEs were really bad. So I had two Bs, five Cs, one E, one N. An N is a near miss, right, from a fail. Right?
An N?
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know they did an N. I suppose yes, I didn't do GCSEs, but and then I must be lucky. Yeah. You, so we did a U, which is I don't know why you bothered.
Unclassified,
Unclassified, because no, we did we were the first year to do GCSEs. You see, so they stopped the O levels back then.
Yeah, the right. Before. Yeah,
and so I wasn't very bright. And then I went to do my A levels, and literally, you know, I was okay at sciences, and the school teacher said, "Look, you should do sciences, you know, just in case." And I suppose they made the decision for me because they thought, you know, I'm sure you'll want to be a dentist because you're Indian, you know what I mean? So, but
nothing like racial stereotypes.
No, I know, but it's worked out for the best, I suppose. But it was so when I went for my careers interview with the school teacher, they were sort of saying, "Well, you good with your hands?" I'm like, yeah, because I enjoyed, you know, design and technology and stuff, you know, playing around with wooden lathes and metal lathes, all that sort of stuff. That was good, and glue guns. And they said, I said, yeah. They said, "Well, maybe you should become a dentist." I'm like, okay. And that was it, right? So, and then back then, if you remember, you had a book, right? And the book was, you know, A to Z, you know, you could, what was it? Mm-hmm. An actuary was the number one, you know, and you'd be thinking, what the hell is an actuarist? Yeah. And then, and it was funny because I was talking to somebody about it recently. You know, each career, they had an average salary of what they made. You remember that in the book?
Yeah.
And they weren't, obviously, what you'd never see that now. That was pretty, really interesting. You'd make a decision based on that. Anyway, so I became, you know, I applied to dentistry. And because I wasn't very committed or didn't know why I was doing it, I had like three interviews. One was at King's. And Sheffield. Yeah, that was it. So King's and Sheffield, and the others I got turned down, but essentially they all turned me down because I was, they said, "Why do you mean a dentist?" I said, "I don't know." So I never got the place.
what a surprise.
Yeah, I know.
So King's didn't want you because you said, "I don't know."
Can you believe that? So it was funny.
I had nothing better to do today.
But the good thing is, you know, I failed my A-levels, which is even better. So I got, what did I get this time? I got a C-E-N as well. So I didn't do well. And at that point, my mum and dad realized maybe the school wasn't good enough for me. And they took me out and my brother, who's a year below me, they took us both out. And then we went to a Cranmer College in Hendon. Because my best friend, who's Japanese, his name is Yuki. So his mum and dad realized that school wasn't that good. So they took him, they took him out much earlier. And he went to that Cranmer school and then did really well, got his A-levels and went off to Japan. Right. So I then did my, I resat my A-levels, which is really annoying. Got three Bs. And essentially I went to Liverpool University. I got turned down by everywhere, really. Because I was a resit student and I went to Liverpool and they said, "We assume you've got no," this is how short the interview was. They said, "We assume you've got no offers." I'm like, "Yes." They said, "Would you like a place?" I said, "Yes, please." And they were like, "What offer would you like?" I said, "Like three E's." They're like, "That's not going to happen." And then I got a place and I passed, got the A-levels and then turned up at Liverpool, really. It was.
I love the fact it's almost a negotiation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it was really bad because I'm a Londoner, right? You know, and I thought, fuck, I want to live in London because my mates are still going to be there. And I was so upset, really. And it was funny.
But in retrospect, was going to Liverpool good for you? Was it a good dental school experience? Did it allow you to some space to grow?
So, you know, forget the word dental school. Dental school is a pile of shit, really, in my mind, right? So what it was is the university experience was the best bit, you know? So so I turned up, and I remember this so vividly. I was sitting in my hall as a resident, and my mum and dad left. Because that, actually, what was interesting is that my brother got his degree, his A-levels, and technically my mum and dad were going to lose their kids at the same time because I was a year late, right?
And
all the way back home because they dropped us both off the same day. One was in Birmingham, one was on to Liverpool. And I was sitting there and they'd left and I was like, what am I doing here? You know, I'm up north. This is fucking going to be shit, right? And then this guy knocks on my door. His name is Sean Rowlands. And he goes, "Oh, I'm Sean Rowlands. I'm a vet student." And that was it. And I just remembered, oh, this is not bad, right? And we became the best of friends and we had such a riot. So it was really good, yeah. And obviously the accent was very challenging. And it was funny, I remember it so vividly because I got in the taxi because we used to go to the union. So back then we had the biggest union in Europe. And I got in a taxi to go to the union like the first night. And this Scouser with a very strong, gruff accent. And I was like, I don't know what you're saying. Do you want to fight me?
Do you want to fight with me?
Yeah, because I was like 19 and I thought I was like pretty fucking hard, you know, the usual bullshit. Yeah.
You were streetwise. You were North London streetwise.
Yeah, supposedly, yeah. But probably a pussy at the end of the day, yeah. But it was so funny. I had a great time. Liverpool University was a great place and it had made me into the person I am because it made you more independent. You know, I know nowadays it's much more challenging because, it costs money and you may have to live it with your parents and stuff. But, you know, back then I didn't pay for my degree or anything like that. And I had a student, you know.
And I suppose also the brilliance of uni then, there's no communication. Because that would probably be before mobile phones or did you have a phone or whatever?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, no one knows where you are, do you? You know?
And it was really good because literally, you'd have a little queue of like, there was a phone that you put money into in the halls and you'd speak to your mum and dad once a week if you did. And you get food parcels. It was really good. It was,
parcels.
You know, you think about it, right? It's like you'd all end up somehow going out on a Monday night or in the week. But now, how the hell did you do that? You know, with no mobile phones, but you rocked up or you'd meet a girl, right? And then how is it you then met her again? Does that make sense? It was amazing. Yeah. There was so much independence back then. I think now there isn't that independence. It's very much more prescriptive and controlled. Do you know what I mean?
It's funny. Yeah. We were talking to Tiff Qureshi, and Tiff was saying about how mobile phones are making people more lonely because you think you've got this tech and you've got access to everything, but the thing it doesn't give you access to really are people and friends and connections. Yeah. But you think you're connected through the mobile phone. But I think you're right. I think sitting down with people physically, you know, your face lit up about your school reunion. Mm. You're sitting in a pub with a bunch of people you went to school with. They were real connections. And those things aren't necessarily as present today as they were.
Everyone wants to be individual, but they don't really.
Yeah.
Because what they do is they all group together. It's really interesting, yeah.
It is. And it is. It's fascinating. Because I was in Sainsbury's buying cat food or something like that the other night. And I was just, I like looking at people. I've always done that. And you just watch this, you know, cause they have a little food area where you sit in Sainsbury's. And I just watched this dad, the son, the daughter and the mother. They weren't talking to them. They're on their phones. And I thought, God,
so sad, isn't it?
It is. And I'm telling you now, I'm not saying that I don't do that as well, but you just realize we have become much more lonely because we're attached to this, this device, which is unhealthy. Mm. I mean, there have been days when I left my phone at home and it's the best day at work, you know,
you're not having a liberating experience,
the freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is
freedom.
It's I really hope going forwards for a lot of, I mean, the youth of today is probably too late, but essentially, you know, maybe the, you know, younger kids, they find a way of, you know, getting true freedom and true control of themselves instead of via social media or whatever it is. Yeah.
Listening to you talk about your school days and your uni experience, I wonder whether the learning experience for you is very heavily linked to the environment. Because you say that school wasn't great and you struggled. You went to another school, you did really well. You went to uni, you got through dental school. But then you then went on to do a four-year program at Guy's, King's and St. Thomas's and ends up with a master's in periodontology and clinical dentistry. So you're not a guy who struggles academically. But is it more to do with the environment you're in? Does the environment have to be right for you to thrive?
So I think you've hit the nail on the head. And I did not. So you've missed one little thing. The dental school. I hated dental school. Right? It was shit. Right? I did something called operative technology in the first year, and in the first term, I thought this is bull. I can't do this. You know, drilling and filling. I just thought this is going to kill me. But once I started, I was going to finish it. But I never hung out at the dental school. So my year, I really enjoyed them. They were a great group of people, but I was never with them all the time. I would leg it every lunchtime and go.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I'd go and hang out
with people. So socially then, Amit. Yeah. So socially, Amit, do you hang out with other people like your vet mate rather than the dentist, the other dental students?
And then And yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then when, so for the first 3 years, obviously all my mates were non-five-year degree individuals. So, and you know, it was a very different environment and we had good time, but then the last 2 years, it was, you know, obviously a little bit more different. I had to, you know, have to interact with more dentists and, but I lived with medics by then. But I just didn't enjoy dental school. I mean, I just, it was boring. So true. Hmm. And it wasn't fun. Hmm. Do you know what I mean? But
did it become more fun as a postgraduate? Was it being an undergraduate that didn't work for you? Did the postgraduate stuff become more interesting?
It's not fun. I'm really sorry.
You're shaking your head.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I'm just telling you the truth, right? So it's not. It's obviously not going to go in the direction you want it to. But so you know, I got.
No, honestly,
we don't care what direction it goes, as long as it's entertaining and informative.
The truth is much better.
Yeah, it is much better. I mean, you know, so when it came, you know, every, you know, first year I always had to resit. No, I didn't resit first year. Second year I had to resit my, you know, my exams because I just couldn't be asked ever studying. The third year, I had to resit as well. Fourth year, we never had any exams. And finals came, I was like, I'm going to resit, so I'm going to pass. I'm going to sit down and prepare and pass my exams. And I did really well in all my exams apart from pediatrics and orthodontics. And I missed that by like, I got 48%. The others I got like 65, 70%. And the thing is, I'm the kind of person who usually... even when I was younger, it was more evident, less so now, I hope, I don't know, maybe not. If I thought you were talking shit, I would just switch off, you know? And I think some of these lecturers sense that I did not believe in their bullshit, you know? So that had a repercussion with one of my exams. So essentially when this orthodontic consultant said to me, I had to go and speak to him and he said to me, you fail because of your attitude. If you don't change your attitude, I'll fail you again. So this is back there in those days when, you know, they could do that. So back then he knocked my confidence. I then went and resat that one exam. I was the only one to ever fail that exam in the history of Liverpool. So that's fine.
Is there a plaque in your honor somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere, yeah. I'm sure there is. Yeah. So
or should we say a blue plaque?
Yeah. See what I did there?
That's very good.
So then I got my, I passed it. I became a house officer and all that sort of stuff. And early on, actually, in fourth year, was it fourth year? We were at a hospital called Walton, and we turned up for a week, and it was like, we were in a theater and they were cutting someone's head and neck open and all this sort of stuff. I'm going, what the hell are you doing? You know? And I said, are you just dentists? No, we're dentists and medics. And that was really cool. And they sensed that I had some enthusiasm about that. And they kept dragging me up at lunchtime to fix fractured jaws. And I would be, you know, doing zygomas and all this sort of stuff. It was really cool. So then I thought, you know what? I might go and do medicine because I really enjoyed being around these individuals who had tons of energy. And then, so I did my house job, got my MFDS and all that sort of stuff that I've got, and an SHO job. And I got into medical school at Leeds. So I got into a 3-year course. And at that point, I then got a job in London, in central London. And I then met the most unhappiest consultants. And I was thinking, and registrars, I'm thinking, oh my God, this could be me. So I got really insecure and I thought, fuck this. And at, back then, I did VT already, a vocational training back then. And we spent one day in a practice in Manchester with a guy called David Cohen. He's an endodontist. And he was just so enthusiastic about doing root canal treatments. And I just really enjoyed it. I thought, right, okay, let me keep in touch with him. Went out for dinner with him. And he brought a periodontist along with him that he worked with. And he was saying, you could do endo as a specialty. And then the other guy says, are you good with the scalpel? I said, yeah, I'm all right. He goes, well, then do perio. And that was it. There was no other decision, right? That's what happened.
Wow.
And so I gave up. I deferred medicine for 1 year. I applied to do perio at Guy's in St. Thomas's. Because that was a 4-year course and it was quite cheap back then. My interview, what do you think the interview went like? What do you think?
based on the previous one,
was it quick?
It probably didn't last that long.
No, it was shit, is the truth. Yeah, they were like, so why do you want to be a dentist? I'm like, I'm trying to make an informed decision.
Because I had dinner with one last week. It was really good.
I like cutting people with a scalpel.
Literally. I mean, it was so bad because they said, your CV looks like you should be doing Max Fax. And I'm like, I couldn't turn around and say, well, actually, I'm one of the very few people in this country who's got a fucking place at medical school and is potentially going to turn it down to do your thing, right?
Yeah.
But they were like, the interview was so bad. And they said, well, we're going to have to offer you a place because you're the only British student. So I got
seriously?
On. Yeah.
Oh, so. Really? So you got in because you weren't international? That was your passport?
Yeah. So I was like, and I'll tell you now, if I applied to do Perio at any of these universities, I would never get in, you know, because I'm not a high-flying, achieving student. Because nowadays, the
bar... Well, you must have said this 3 or 4 times, Amit, but you're a guy who struggled through your GCSEs, you struggled through your A-levels, you struggled through dental school, you struggled through a 4-year program at Guy's, King's and St. Thomas's, you're a guy who set up a squat practice. Yeah. You seem to struggle but achieve an awful lot.
Oh, I think I plod along. That's what I say. You know, what you're doing, I'm plodding along, yeah.
I think you strike me as somebody, going back to that school thing, I think the environment matters to you. I think if you have people around you with energy and you get inspired, you do well. Yeah. If it's you switch off quickly.
Completely, because I get bored. Because the thing is, you can see they're just not into shit, you know. And it's like when I was 16, I would have left school and joined the army or become a builder or plumber. I would have been quite content doing those, you know. But And I suppose people might turn around and say, well, you know, he might not have been a good periodontist. But actually, what I have learned over time is that I love talking to patients, having fun with them, you know, just taking the mickey. And it's like a much easier environment, you know. And also, because of the way I work, the patient and dentists who refer to me, it's really interesting. Some dentists will say, I don't think I'll refer you to him because you won't like him. So that's really good. You know, and they'll refer that patient to another dentist who might be much more professional or whatever the word
but
is.
But you now
relationship though. Isn't
oh
it?
Yeah. But you now control your environment because you set up Birmingham Dental Specialists. So you've got your specialist referral practice in Birmingham.
Yeah.
What was the period in between coming out of dental school, doing your postgrad stuff, and getting to opening a practice?
How did you end up in Birmingham?
Did you bounce around as an associate?
And you know what? That's a really, really good question because essentially a lot of specialists. See, you know, one of the reasons why you think you become a specialist is because there's a pyramid and you think you're at the top, right? But you're not. As soon as I became a specialist, I realized I was at the bottom because I need the GDP, who's at the top of that pyramid, to refer to me, right? And I think a lot of specialists forget that. Until they've gone into, you know, once they run their own business and sort of stuff. And I learned that and I used to work all over the country and in London. And you know, you end up just, you know, schlepping around from clinic to clinic and you can't focus and you can't enjoy it as much. You know what I mean? I mean, I've got friends, really good friends who are happy to do that because they like that different environment, different exposure all the time. Mm. But I like control, you know? So I was all over the shop and then I moved to Birmingham because my girlfriend is an intensive care consultant here. And essentially she said, why don't you move up here? And I moved up here in 2007, had no work. And obviously, Birmingham is like the second biggest city in the country and it's got like 2 million population or something like that. But there's very few periodontists here, maybe 2 back then. So I rocked up and it's a very heavily NHS orientated city. So, and the university is very good. It takes a lot of referrals and does a lot of treatment. So it was more of a challenge to start a squat here. But luckily, Prof Chappell, Ian Chappell, who's a mentor of mine, offered me a job in Birmingham because he found out I was here. So that was good, you know, just working one day a week there as an associate specialist.
Did you feel there was a need that you had to set up your own squat if you wanted to do what you did because there wasn't the environment in Birmingham?
So what happened was I was working, when I moved to Birmingham, so I was working with Prof Chappell one day a week. I worked for a guy called Jason Buglass and he had a practice up in Shropshire, which is a really beautiful part of the world, in Shrewsbury, and then Stafford, and then one in Birmingham City Centre. So I was now travelling between these three areas.
Yeah.
And, you know, to beat the motorway traffic to get to Shrewsbury and to Stafford, I used to leave the house at 7 and just to get there for 9, you know what I mean? And I just, after a certain time, I thought, you know what, I can't do that. So 10 years ago, I just thought, you know what, let's start this little squat. It was just, where, if you look where I am now, I'm in the city centre, at the back, hidden away. It was a dental practice, and it never has any walk-in trade, right? So it's never been a successful business ever here. But as a referral practice, it's worked quite well because you have to come to see. So we rarely get patients coming off the street. And, you know, people might Google us or whatever it is, but it's always a referral base, you know. So we've got about 180 referring dentists in total.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's not bad. I mean, not saying every single one refers, you know, maybe.
No.
Yeah.
Consistently.
It's a good old pool to fish in, though, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, and we're not even touched it. I mean, I might get less than 60 continuously referred to me, which is lovely. You know, they come all the way from Ludlow, Hereford.
I was going to say, being in Birmingham, you've got a huge catchment area.
It's very central, isn't it?
Accessible, isn't it? Yeah.
It's probably quite good as well, because those casual ones that wander in probably aren't interested in perio, but they want a general. So therefore, you can almost refer back, can't you, as well?
Yeah, exactly. and that's been really helpful now, especially, you know, with the way the NHS has gone, you know, because we get loads of dentists ringing up saying, I can't get to see my dentist. So now I'll be like, say, you know what, how about you go and see my colleague in this part of the world? And it works. It appreciate that, you know, because I think, you know, it's so kind that they refer to me, which is, you know, which is lovely. And they want me to try to treat their patients. I think that's really generous and kind, really.
You're such a, I mean, how long have we've known you? Not very long for, you know, but what comes across is you're a real people person.
All right, that's very good.
You're a relationship person, communication person, and that's what's important to you. And whether it be patients or whether it be the dentists that you respect in the role that they have in what you do, and obviously, I think your cheekiness to a certain degree in some of those situations with your exams. But I think it's that personal bit that's coming through to me big time.
But I think as a specialist, that really matters, because quite understandably, you get some general practitioners who are concerned about referring their patients away from their practice and how they're going to be treated. What's that that relationship going to look like outside of their practice and their control? So having a trusted third party that they can refer to. But the way you approach relationships means that the referring dentist will feel very comfortable with them sending them to you. And it's interesting, you also have dentists who say, I just don't think this patient's going to work for you.
Yeah. I love that because they obviously know me. Right?
Yeah.
They are choosing who they want to refer, because they're, you know, and, you know, one thing that I have learned is, you know, because when you're younger, you're stupid and you think, you know, you're the best thing since sliced bread and shit like that. But, you know, I've had patients who've come in and you think, you can do better than the other dentist. And it's like, well, that's such fucking arrogance, you know, and then you make a mistake and it goes worse than what someone's done before you. And nowadays, more and more, I say to my patients, you know, look, I'm not good enough to treat you. You know, if someone irritates me in the slightest, you know, and I know it's going to, you know, not go in the right direction, and they have unreasonable expectations, I will turn around and say, look, I ain't good enough for you. And then that just flummoxes them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a very powerful thing.
It's hilarious. Yes. Yeah?
And for someone that has repeatedly said, I've skimmed it and I just sneaked in and I got in on this, I was the only UK student and they were all international. You have raised yourself to the dizzy heights of, you created a squat, you got your own dental practice, and you also lecture internationally on your subject, which is an amazing thing to do. Specifically on the lecturing side of things, what are the differences that you've observed being international to dentistry outside the UK to inside the UK? Are we quite standard in how we approach dentistry? Are we ahead of the pack? Are we behind? Where would you say we sit based on your international experience?
Okay, honestly, I think the UK is really, really behind in dentistry. It's shocking, right? So before I became the president of the ADI, you would never catch me go to any dental meeting in the UK, right? Where I, because as soon as I qualified, guys, I realized I wasn't good enough to be known as a specialist because I didn't learn some of the cool stuff I've read in journals and stuff. And it's like, well, why are we not doing this? And I think the reason for that is the NHS limits what can be achieved, you know, within that setting. Because they might turn around and say, well, where's the evidence for this? But actually, when you look at the they want to look at meta-analysis and all this sort of stuff. But when you look at the stuff that's coming out from Italy and all these other places in the world and Switzerland, you're thinking, why are we not doing this for our patients? So as soon as I got my degree, I went to a lecture for an organization called Osteology, and I met a guy called Giulio Rasparini. He's a professor from Milan. He's amazing, you know, just infectiously enthusiastic. And, you know, we've become really good friends. So I spent a month in Milan with him at his university, learned loads of cool stuff, learned new regenerative techniques for perio. And what was really interesting is I was trying to get him over here to lecture. And whenever I tried to organize something, people were going, who is he? But it's like, well, because you only know what was here, right? Mm. But I was looking at the rest of the world. Do you know what I mean? And maybe now that I know what FOMO means, yeah, fear of missing out, maybe it was that, you know? Mm. But I also knew that I could be better. Do you know what I mean? Because I've seen it. So why can't I do it? Do you know what I mean? And I spent time at Harvard with another professor called Myron Nevins and a mate of mine called David Kim. And I just realized there's so much more to be done, you know? Mm. So I definitely think we are far behind, but it's slowly moving. I mean, there's a mate of mine called Andoni Jones. He's young from Spain and he lives in Dublin. He's one talented implant dentist. He's doing some cool stuff that you would never have done. You would never be taught at university. Another mate of mine called Viraj, he spent 2 years at NYU doing implant training, and the work he's doing is excellent. So they're bringing that stuff back to the UK, and people are now wanting to do their courses, which is good, you know. Mm. So,
and I assume as you're the president of the ADI, so I assume it now puts you in a position of influence to bring perhaps some of these dentists to the UK, perhaps just to, you know, raise the game, raise the expectation level.
Yeah. So again, I was, you're right. I am in a very fortunate position and I could do that. So we had a conference in May at the ICC in Birmingham. Mm. And fortunately, because I've been lucky enough to lecture abroad and learn some cool stuff from some of the best people in the world, I just rang my mates up and I said, oh, listen, do you want to come and lecture at this conference? They were like, yeah. So I was really, really lucky. And these speakers, you know, you have to pay them a lot of money. And I said, well, we don't have that money. And they were like, it's you, Amit, we'll do it for you. It's not a problem. So I was really felt lucky that over the last 15 years, I've built these relationships with these people and they were willing to give their time to come to.
But it's funny because I very much sense that dentistry is a very caring, collaborative profession. You know, we're not clinical at all, but from the business side of things, there's always a lot of support, collective support. And within the clinic, on the clinical side, you definitely see dentists looking to, you know, help others, you know, lift others up, you know, spend time with younger dentists. It does seem a very caring and collaborative profession. It's nice to feel and see that that isn't just a UK thing. That's a global thing.
Yeah, and definitely, yeah, very much a global thing. I mean, and you know, when I have cases that go wrong, and obviously, you know, I have them, you know, because I'm not the best, right? And then I'm at a loss thinking, who should I ask for advice? I mean, I only go abroad. I speak to my mates abroad saying, listen, what would you do with this case? And they'd always come back to me straight away and say, listen, and these are the most influential people, you know, well-published and stuff. And they're like, no problems. This is the way to deal with the situation. And that, you know, has been really good for me. And then, you know, when I get people asking me for advice here in the UK, I hopefully pass on the same sort of information. Mm.
Pass it on.
Yeah. And it's really
at that ADI congress this year, lots of people would recognize you for your locks, your long hair, yeah. which you'd obviously been growing for many years, over two decades.
Wait, no.
The ADI two Congress, decades? You decided to have your...
I've only grown that hair from lockdown. Jesus. It was so long. Yeah, I was good for lockdown. But you know what? Let's grow it. So let me show you. So because
there was a lot of it.
Yeah, I did have a lot. It was down to here. It was down to there. It was just so impractical. Wow. And so it's really funny because the conference, you know, because the thing is, obviously, I am a very different individual. I am not, you know, the straight-laced professional dentist that you would think, you know, is what we're supposed to be. You know what I mean? I mean, if I was not scared of needles, I'd have tattoos. I'd love to have tattoos, but I'm just scared of needles, right? The event was on the 4th of May, and obviously May the 4th, be with you if you're a Star Wars fan, right?
Star Wars, science fiction.
Not a big fan.
No one's a big fan?
Jesus.
No, Chris likes it.
Andy doesn't really do science fiction.
Not a big science fiction fan.
Oh, man, if I knew, I would have invited you both. I didn't know that. So, it just accidentally fell on that day, right? So it's like, right, okay, you know what? Let's have it as a Star Wars theme party. And some people thought, fucking knob, right? Who's going to turn up at this thing in the Star Wars theme party, right?
Anyone turn up as Princess Leia?
Yeah, that was me. Did you not know?
Did you wear the outfit from Jabba the Hutt?
Yeah, sorry, Andy, this is a slave outfit. I don't have the abs for it. I'm a bit on the. I got a couple of spare tires down there, so that didn't work. But essentially, there were these two reps from Geischlicht, Nicola Leatham and Fiona, and they both were desperate to do my hair like in Princess Leia bun. So I got it done as let me find you a photo.
Did you? Oh, brilliant.
I look like a fucking twat. But you know what? I am quite a shy person. But
you hide it very well.
Yeah, but not that
yeah,
night.
Yeah, but I was like, I was committed. And it took them like 20 minutes to do this hair. It was so tight. And it was like, how the hell do girls walk around with all these pins and shit in their hair? I was just like, Where's the photo? I've got to find the photo. It's on my many
so when you had your hair put in this Princess Leia styled buns, had you already decided at this point that you would be having your head shaved? Something that was pre-planned
or? Good point. So what happened was I set up a next gen committee because we were the biggest problem with the ADI is that we're all quite old and it's coming, people are retiring. Mm. I need to be able to attract more younger people. So I chose a group of people, so that they could run their own mini conference that day. So we've got a next gen ADI committee and they are amazing, just enthusiastic. And you know what? What's lovely about them is they're not competitive. You know, the thing with implant dentistry, we're all very competitive. Mm. Oh, you know, my dad's bigger than your dad. You know, I could have used other words than that, but you know what I want to say, right?
So we get the gist.
Yeah, you got the gist. So essentially, and then they get on so well, which is so lovely. And we managed to get 90 people to turn up to their mini event, talk about how their journey was into implant dentistry. So that was really quite successful. Brilliant. I was really pleased with it. And then we have a DCP section run by Lindsay Baker, so we had the most number of people attend that event. And then we had the lab technician, Danny Cleary, who's the lab technician rep for the ADI. And he did the best ever. We've had the most number of people attend that event. So we had 1,100 people attend the ADI, which is the most ever. So it was really good. I mean, I didn't realize
how good. That's really good.
And because I was under a lot of pressure, I was super stressed by it all. So there's my hair. Do I look like a numpty?
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Wow, that's so for people that aren't watching this on YouTube, there's a beautiful picture of Amit with his Princess Leia buns in his hair. It's worth tuning on YouTube.
Look
just
a bit
to
like
that.
A dodgy set of headphones.
I look like a right fucking prick, yeah. And I mean, it was really funny because, and check this one out. People were saying he looks like Shrek.
Oh, nice, nice.
That's very harsh. Yeah. Very, very harsh.
But no.
but no, actually, it was really lovely because one of my patients makes he makes suits. He's a bespoke tailor. He's got a, I don't know how it's happened, but he has a shop in Dubai and New York and London. And he said, oh, you know what? I'll make you a suit. So he made me this beautiful suit. I've never had a suit made for me. And it was just like the coolest thing. And inside it has space, yeah, space lining and stuff like that, lining of like of space and some shuttles and stuff like that. So it was really cool. Never paid for it. He gave it to me as a gift. It was really cool. So I wore that.
That's sweet.
It was really sweet, yeah. And it was like, I mean, I don't know if you had a bespoke suit. He says, you can just stand there. Can you feel it kind of kissing every part of your body? I'm like, I can. Yes, I can. You know, hilarious.
That's
what proper tailoring is about.
So
it was on the 4th of May, and we had a Star Wars theme party, and then I got Tim Peake, the astronaut, to lecture. Right. Now, Tim Peake, if you can ever hear him lecture, he was pretty cool. You know, I mean, he was just so inspiring, talking about, you know, his time on the space station and stuff. He was amazing.
I bet it was an incredible talk.
Oh, he was just so cool. You know, and we had like 900 people in the audience, and they were going, this is, and he was a keynote speaker, like you, non-dental, and people loved him. You know, didn't talk about teeth or anything like that. So it was really good. Mm-hmm. And I think that helped make it a very different event. And then we got on with the normal dental part of it. And then, like you said, so the whole aim was that the Next Gen committee said, you know what, you should cut your hair at the conference and try to raise money. And then I spoke to a guy called Dev Patel at the BDIA, actually. And his lovely wife, says, you know what, you should say how much you want to raise, because then people know what you want to raise. I didn't know you had to do that. And so we did that. And then mm-hmm. she says, and also set a GoFundMe page, which I didn't really know how to do. So that was really lovely. So we then raised money. The hair went to a wig charity, the Little Princess Trust. We made two wigs from that.
Yeah.
And then the money we raised went to Shaz Memon's Wells on Wheels charity, which is
Wells on Wheels. Yeah.
An amazing charity. And it was amazing. Yeah.
You're being very modest, but you were saying that you've already raised over £21,000.
We raised 21, but check out this. So the three highest bidders. So we had one guy put £2,500 in, another one put in two, and actually we had a few dentists put in two, and the rest were like 500. It was really generous. You know, it was so kind that people were putting money in. I know they were drunk, but it was nice, you know.
It helps.
It's all about timing.
It helps.
The three guys that got to cut my hair were these guys. And so I bought the scissors. And then that wig went off to kids' charity. Then I gave them a pair of clippers, and they took the guard off, right? And they made me look like that.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow. Nice. That's classy.
I know.
Yeah, and that dude at the back. Wow. Slick.
That dude at the back, his name is Phil McCauley. He's lovely. He's got practice in Bournemouth, and his wife is Kaylee. And he got up and says, I can't let Amit walk around like that. So he came and started tidying me up.
Yeah, that looks like some weird old haircut, that one.
Yeah, I know. Sure. I was bald.
Brilliant.
Literally, 9 weeks ago today, I had no hair. And it was like early May. Normally you think it's hot, but it was freezing. And I was like, is that what people feel like?
But what a remarkable thing to do. And it also, going back to that kind of the spirit of dentistry in terms of the generosity of people, you know, you put people in the room for a good cause and, you know, something incredible
comes
happens.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know,
and rains really hard when it hits your head. That was the thing.
Yeah, well, really hard. The heat. I tell you, when I was walking one Saturday, I was like, "Oh, my head's burning. What is wrong with this?" Because you know, when you got hair, it's not an issue. And it was like, right, it was good in the sense that you know, because even one of my mates from Brazil, he rocked up on the stage after Tim Peake left, and he says, Amit, do you mind if I put on my Jedi outfit and just lecture in it? And I'm like, do what you want, Ricardo. You're my mate, it's not an issue. So he took his kit off, got his kit off in the back, And he puts on the Jedi outfit with a lightsaber, and people went ballistic. And it was like, it just set the tone of the event, because it was like, you know what?
Brilliant.
We are serious. We have high-powered clinicians here, but I don't need to be. Yeah. I don't need to pretend to be super professional, because I know what I'm
It can be fun as well.
They truly let their hair down.
Yeah. They let their, exactly. They did let their hair down. And it was, you know, go on, sorry.
I was going to say, I think post-COVID, there is a renewed desire to have fun whilst working. I think if you go into a dental event or a conference, it doesn't have to be staid and formal and clinical. You can also put the word fun and wrap it around it, and the two can coexist together. Mm. And that sounds like what you've achieved there.
And, you know, if you think about it, back when you're a student, you know, you telling me we didn't go out and fucking get pissed and wreak havoc in a hotel or whatever and get kicked out, right? And suddenly it's like, well, okay, that is a lot of fun, but maybe we're not allowed to do that now as an adult, right? But, you know,
you can do different fun.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like suddenly, you know, we had stormtroopers. I came as the Mandalorian.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, it was good.
And has no idea. And has no idea what we're talking about now.
No.
He's a bit sad.
I thought a Mandalorian was a thing you use in the kitchen to cut your vegetables up.
That's me in my Mandalorian helmet. And there's my baby Yoda Grogu, and that's Lando Calrissian. People really turned up. It was so good. Check out this guy. This is Dan Story from BioHorizons. He's got a BioHorizons implant kit on his thing. He's wearing a builder's outfit, and he looks really cool.
He does. He looks like a starfighter, whatever they are.
Exactly.
And this is, I think this is almost guaranteed. This feels like it's going to guarantee record attendance at the ADI Congress next year.
I want to go now.
Yeah, I know.
Can't do it again now. That's a problem. You have to wait.
It was a laugh. I mean, check this out. Then the next day, there was three baldies lecturing. There's me in the middle.
Brilliant.
I mean, obviously,
that is brilliant.
I'm the one with real hair, but at one time. But and then the best.
I love the sense of fun that you bring to it.
Check this out. So anybody who had no hair, I would do. Oops, sorry, wrong way. I would do that to them.
To help them out.
Yeah, just. Aid them.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, and they didn't care, which was so nice. And a lot of the speakers did turn around and say they've never had so much fun at an event, because it wasn't so serious, but it was, you know what I mean? But and everybody had.
That's brilliant. Really,
I mean,
brilliant.
I was under a lot of pressure because I can't remember the event at all. I've had to look at photos. And then so it ended on the Saturday, and then on Wednesday night at 2 a.m, I woke up and I said, I think it might have been all right.
But the thing is, this feeds back to the thing we've said a couple of times already. You know, when you're in an environment that's simulating, you do really well. Yeah. So it almost feels like you've now kind of injected some of that into the ADI that says, if we make it fun and simulating, people are going to learn and enjoy it. They're going to retain the information, and they're going to want to come back. And that almost kind of captures what happened at the ADI this year.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, they all sort of said, oh, it went ballistic on Instagram. I have no idea. But, you know, we've been now learning how to use social media and stuff. And I really hope that, you know, people want to join the ADI and think, you know what, we can be family, and we can learn, and we're happy to share with each other.
Kickstart it, maybe.
Yeah. I really hope that is the future. And actually, it's really cool because a good friend of mine called Pinartha George, which everybody knows him as George. He's like one of the most, exceptional implant dentists in the UK. Super knowledgeable, just educating tons of people on cool stuff. And also graduate from Liverpool. He's going to be the president in 2 years' time. So he's with his, you know, with him as well. I, you know, he's got more energy than I have. So
hopefully it'll be brilliant.
Even better, really.
Mm. It's been a great chat. I mean, what I find quite interesting is you said previously that your interview skills are appalling and they're still rubbish today. I think for anyone listening to this, that's a lie. You make a great guest. You tell great stories.
Yeah. Brilliant.
You bring colour and you're not conventional, but in the best sense of the word. You know, the way you go about things isn't conformist in any way, but it shows that you can still be really successful and be who you are.
Mm. I really appreciate that.
Come alive.
Thank you. I don't take it very well. I'm very like, oh, okay, I'm gone now.
Well, let's move on from that quick. Let's move on from that quickly because we always finish by asking.
Let's hide your embarrassment.
While you blush, we'll continue with another question. We always ask our guests the same two questions at the end. And the first question for you is that if you could be a fly on a wall in a situation, when would that be, and who would be there?
So what did Joe Lovett say? Did he say he wanted to be when the colonel was making the very famous KFC?
I think it was the KFC. I think he wanted to know the spices that went into KFC.
That just came to my mind, and I'm like, oh, but you know what? That'd be really cool.
The Coca-Cola man.
But what I find remarkable about that is you can go back to the beginning of the universe and you could see, you know, how the planet started. There's all these incredible events through history. And Joe wants to know what spices are in his KFC. I love that. I love that. That was a thing.
Given it just shows the importance of KFC in
that
Joe's
moment.
Life.
That's what Joe wanted.
It's a good question. I mean, there's loads of things I'd love to listen to, you know, professionally, of what's going on, you know, because find out what people think about me, really. But it's a really good question. I went to Hiroshima once, right? And I've always thought about it because there was a, you know, obviously they dropped the bomb there. World War II, and it's really interesting. So there's a museum there, and you can see there's a letter written by, you know, the president of the USA. It was Winston and Stalin, right? And they've all signed it. They're saying, oh, you know what? We can't bomb Kyoto. We can't bomb these cities, but this is the ones that we're going to look at bombing, right? And so I would probably like to be a fly on the wall in that room when they're both, and all three of them thinking, you know what? We know what this is going to do. We'll choose this city to bomb. You know, I know it's a bit morbid, but their faces and the way they move.
That's an interesting one, though, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's a very big decision because you're right. There would have to have been a positive decision taken.
What were to choose
that
city? What were
the
factors involved?
Yeah, and that city will be forever known.
Yeah, and they knew what the consequences are going to be because I remember vividly, again, reading this letter, going, you know, these guys knew what was going to happen. So they said, you know, Kyoto has a historic, whatever the word is, you know, it has some sort of history for humanity, so we can't destroy that. Mm. We'll destroy the shit out of this. You know, I mean, it's a bit morbid, but I would love to see the look on his. I mean, it was interesting, you know, even when you saw that film, that Winston film, where he was begging for the Americans to send planes, and they were like, we can send him via Canada, but you have to take him by a horse. And I would love to, like, the shot in that scene is like, you know, he was heartbroken, but you know, I'd like to know what happened there.
Yeah. They're heavyweight decisions, aren't they? Mm. That they made.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Mm.
So we'll see if we can lighten the mood somewhat now. And our follow up question. Yeah, well, the colonel might feature. So the follow up question is: if you could meet somebody, if you were given the opportunity to sit down and have a glass of wine, a beer, or a coffee with somebody, who would you like to meet?
Hitler.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good question. Good question. It's a really good question. It's really sad. I'm going to go back to this. I mean, I could say Elon Musk and stuff, but I think he's probably nuts, you know, and you wouldn't have a good conversation. But it would have to be Mark Hamill from, you know, Luke Skywalker. Just listen to all of his stories because he's such a, you know, when you listen to him talk, he's hilarious.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, he
cool.
was
you
like,
really are, you really are Star Wars geek, aren't you?
Yeah. And then he's, you know, he's the voice of Batman, you know, cartoons as a Joker. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, no way, you know? So yeah, I would love and sit with him and listen to him ramble on and see what he's been up to. Yeah,
I think it would always be fascinating for someone, you know, like that or Indiana Jones or whatever.
Yeah.
To, you know, when they first had that sort of read through the script, thinking, wow, this is going to spawn so many things. Because at that time, I remember watching an interview with, I think it was Alec Guinness, who was interviewed by Parkinson or something.
Yes.
And they said to him, you know,
what about your pay? Because I think he was the first one, wasn't he, to want a take
he
of
took
the
percentage.
The
didn't
percentage. He? Yeah. And I remember him saying, "Oh, they wanted me to do it," and I said, "Oh, well, I'll do it for 2%." And then when they came to negotiate, they said that 1.5%, and he went, "No, it was 2% of all the take-ins." And I would think he probably didn't know. He just I think he said, wasn't it? It was some silly science fiction film, but I just thought it would be interesting to do.
Wow. You know, that was a big 2%.
Because a good friend of mine from school, he went a long winding path like me, and then became a product designer. It makes props designers for films. So he was working on Tom Cruise's Edge of Tomorrow. Do you remember that one where there's the repeating of the same day sort of thing? Really cool film. And he made the mech suit for that. And essentially in his lunchtime, he would make the Millennium Falcon and then sell it to whoever on eBay or whatever. And somebody saw this Millennium Falcon and they rang him up and they said, "Look, Ellis," they said, "Neil, you know, you've got the Millennium Falcon. Can we just buy it off you?" And he goes, yeah, of course you can. He goes, what do you need for it?" He goes, "Oh, we need it for the next Star Wars film." Right. So, and he goes,
"Oh, really?"
Yeah. So he says, "You know what? Why don't you just hire me?" Right. And I'm like, "Actually, no, that's a better idea." So he was the one who made all of the ships and the robots.
Wow.
So it's really cool because he makes these huge kind of scale models that maybe about this big. And then they have the scene and they put it in, like, you remember when the TIE fighter crashed in the desert and they put it there and they check what it looks like before they make the big thing. So he's worked on Solo, he's made all of them. And
wow.
And he's a massive Star Wars geek, you know what I mean? So
that was a job from heaven for him.
What a great one, though. You know, we talk about some moments that change your life. That was one where he said, "Well, why not just employ me?"
Mm. Exactly.
He could have so easily gone, just sold him the Millennium Falcon, couldn't he?
Yeah.
What a brilliant one about.
And they would have, they would have paid him 70K for it or whatever, you know, and he would have been like, "You know what, let's pay him." And you know, he made all the Star Wars films. He's been working on Acolyte and all this sort of stuff. You know, there's a lot of these TV shows. And he's just, it's interesting when you sit down and think about that one. Because essentially he was going to go on and make this I don't know, this film about a submarine. I don't know. What was that Englishman who was married? He's married. Oh, I don't know. Can't remember. Anyway,
sounds like great opportunities for him, though.
Star Wars thing, which is great, you know. Has been really good.
Yeah.
I tell you what, it fits so well, doesn't it, when we do those things where we say to people, just ask a question. It's the worst someone's going to say is no.
Yeah.
But this it's the truth, isn't it? I mean, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, I don't want to ask her out because she might say no, right?
Mm.
And it is that. It's still that in the back.
It's just no.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just no. But I guess we all learn over time that if you don't ask the question, it's a guaranteed no.
It's guaranteed,
isn't it? If you do ask the question, there's a chance it could be a yes, or it might lead on to something else.
But you know,
really good.
The thing is, it also applies to dentistry. You know, when you make the judgment based on the patient saying, "Oh, they can't afford it," but it's like, well, why are we making that judgment based on what we think when you should just ask them, you know? And and again, definitely. I learned that from Ashi Latta because I had to do a selling course because I'm shit at selling.
So that's true.
Look at that. There's something else that you're terrible at but have gone on to be very successful at. Yeah.
Well,
Amit, we appreciate your time today. It's been really
great.
Fabulous.
Thank you. Yeah.
Your really stories are great. I think the way you've weaved it through is lovely. Lots of people find it like therapy. They kind of jump on our couch for an hour and they sort of run through their stories of their life, and it's good for us. It's good for us. I think you've got a lovely story.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's been a very enjoyable time.
Well, thank you very much to meet you at the BDIA early this year. It was nice to.
And we'll definitely try and get up to the ADI, the next ADI as well. It'd be lovely to see what you curate as an event.
Well, let's see.
Yeah, but, fabulous.
I wish I'd invited you. I completely forgot. My brain wasn't working.
No, not at all. There's lots to come.
There's lots more to come. Yeah,
exactly.
Thanks very much.
Keep well. Take care.
Cheers. If I don't see you, have a lovely summer. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too. Cheers,
man.
Keep well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.